Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to another podcast from Scanlane Media. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle.
And this is the Playlist Podcast. Hey, remember that name, Jen?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fairly, it's faintly. I remember it faintly.
It's ancient Scanlane history at this point. When we first started out, we would do features that we called playlists. God, that was 6 years ago!
We've been at it for a while, huh?
I guess. Wow. Yeah, so we would do features where we would talk about what we'd played and what we'd been, you know, other media, you know, books we've been reading and shows we've been watching and whatever. And just, you know, to do a quick summary of how that's been going for us. I don't know. So I guess kicking it off, like, how has your week been? Has it been a pretty crazy week for you?
It's been fairly busy for me. Like there's been certain times of the day when I've had a pretty large workload, but for the most part it seems mostly normal. At least my current normal anyway.
Had you had much time to get into some media and various things, like extracurricular activities, or has work pretty much been consuming your life?
Yeah, I've been getting into a little bit of games, a little bit of shows, that sort of thing. I've mostly been chipping away at Judgment when I can.
The latest from the Yakuza team.
Yeah. I didn't pay super close attention to the marketing for it, because I thought that they were going to be doing a bit more distancing from Yakuza than they actually do, but it's pretty much another Yakuza game with a slightly different focus on characters.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess the combat must be pretty much just Yakuza combat, right?
Yeah, you have two different styles and you switch between them. You have a heat gauge that allows you to do special attacks. You load your inventory with stamina, and you can pick up items and use them as weapons. And you're still doing things like curb stomping people.
So, why is it not a Yakuza game?
So, the two things that kind of separate it, one, instead of working with someone who's within organized crime, you're playing Yagami, who is this... He used to be this defense attorney, but after one of his cases went really bad, to the point where the person that he was defending ended up getting acquitted for a crime, then immediately went to kill his girlfriend. The defendant's girlfriend. He decided, okay... Well, he more or less got kicked out of... He more or less got kicked out of the court system after that and became a rough and tumble detective. And most of what you're doing in this game, at least outside of the fights and various Yakuza-style side quests, is tailing people, taking a look at situations to kind of investigate, using your drone to take snapshots, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, obviously you've got the tailing mechanics and stuff, the bit of investigation, but, like, I don't know, like, the side content and everything, does it feel like a Yakuza game in terms of, like, I mean, are you having, like, conversations with a dominatrix? I mean, like, how's this going?
Yeah, I haven't really run into a dominatrix, but for the most part, a lot of the side quests happen through taking jobs on your job board. You still run into them every now and then that are just sprinkled across the map and you stand in the right place and they activate. But yeah, you take on cases like there's this sister who's basically of this other person who's basically constantly being harassed by the Twisted Trio, which are various forms of perverts. And like, one of them is called Ass Ketchum, and his whole thing is running around in a tracksuit, grabbing people's asses and telling them what sport they'd be good at.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's... a slight bit of homophobia in there, because one of the things that helps you get that person undone is revealing that the person's ass he grabbed was actually a man's ass, and that basically depowers him and allows him to be arrested. But yeah, it's one of those situations where I have some friends on Twitter who play these games a lot more than I have. I played parts of Yakuza 3 before giving it up, and then I got back into it with Yakuza 0 because that was such a fantastic game. But most of the people I've talked to said that the side stories in this are average to slightly worse than most Yakuza games.
Okay, and the main story, then? Is that, I mean, I guess you haven't, you have played ones, I mean, 0 has a strong story, but 3... three's okay. So I guess you've seen a pretty inconsistent picture of Yakuza stories, but how is Judgment shaking out so far?
I'm almost done with Judgment's main story, and so far I've liked it a whole lot. Like, I don't know if I'd call it more grounded than Yakuza, but it's one of those situations where they're talking about real things like I don't know, corruption with the government going pretty high up, and it does a good job of keeping you on your toes and throwing in a bunch of twists and turns here and there. Some of the stuff has legitimately surprised me with the way that it went, and your main thrust for most of the story is chasing someone that you call the Mole, which is a serial killer whose whole thing is killing someone, then using an ice pick to gouge out their eyes, essentially. And leaving them with sunglasses to kind of hide the damage, but yeah. And you end up getting embroiled with one of the much, much smaller families of the Tojo clan. I think they're like a magnet family or something. And yeah, it turns out that the boss for that family more or less raised you. He kept you out of the Yakuza dealings himself, but he paid for you to go to law school and everything like that. So you end up talking with him a bunch of times and kind of getting into scuffles because the person that's gaining power within that family is a gigantic jackass. And he's the one that's played by he's the one that used to be played by one half of a Denke Groove before they got busted on a cocaine charge and got straight up erased from the game by Sega.
I don't know, is that noticeable? Does that feel weird having this character? Or is it if you weren't told, would you feel like you wouldn't know?
That's the scary thing. It's totally unnoticeable if I didn't know what was going on. Like, most of these characters are modeled after real world actors, and the new model they found for this person, it looks very much like a real person. And I'm not sure whether they got someone else to do face capture in this person instead. Pierre Taki, that was the name. Yeah. And all of the dialogue flows rather smoothly to the point where it feels like at times that they recorded at the same time. So it's frightening how, like, Judgment released not that long ago in Japan before all this shook out. Like, it was just a few months ago when that happened, and they were able to somehow take a game that's, like, if you're mainlining it, around 25 to 35 hours to complete, and within 3 months, they completely and totally replace this person.
And I mean, it's a team that's used to doing, I mean, you know, on one hand, I guess the fact that it took a couple of months is something? I don't know, but it is weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's uncomfortable just how easily they can replace people like this.
Yeah. It's one of those things where You'd like to think that a person's performance in something is irreplaceable, but given the way that games can be updated, like, and a much more minor example of this happening, but the first significant one I remember is the way that Bungie patched out Peter Dinklage as Ghost in the first Destiny game and replaced him with Nolan North. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. The Peter Dinklage performance was never amazing, but there's still something that felt kind of weird about that. And seeing Judgment go... Seeing a game that I never even got to play in its original form because it was already overwritten within 3 months of its release is unnerving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Oh, I don't know. It opens a weird door. I feel like, and it's also, I mean, not getting into, it's a cultural thing, so I don't know how much we can speak about. I mean, Japan has this culture of erasing people who get accused of crimes like this because they have a 99% conviction rate, which is what the game is about, which makes it ironic. But also, I don't know, it's not like, the U.S.'s conviction rate is also pretty high. Not 99%, but it's also pretty high. But still, there is a difference there, and it's hard to know because, like, as a Westerner, I see that and I say, well, that's really fucked up that they would do that. But, like, I don't know. I don't have the opinion of a normal, like, of a Japanese, you know, like, player or a consumer of media. I wonder what they think about it, you know?
Yeah. I do know that the director of Judgment was furious with Sega's decision. Like, he mentioned something about wanting to find a way to preserve Pierre Taki's performance in some way, but I don't know that enough about what that original performance looked like or Pierre Taki himself to tell whether that actually made it into the game in any form.
Huh. Yeah, that's a shame.
Indeed.
What else have you been playing?
I've been playing some Team Sonic Racing.
Well, let's talk about what I've been playing.
Yeah, good idea.
No, I'm kidding.
Okay. But yeah.
It's a team racer. It's a team-based racing game. How's that?
It works surprisingly well. Like, the main gist of it is you either are working with or against other players, or you're just picking a character and letting the computer pick the other two. And essentially, it takes some mechanics you're familiar with from something like Mario Kart, except it reframes them in a team manner. Like, you can slingshot past people by riding within their, whatever it's called when you're drifting behind someone and you're catching the...
It's drafting.
Yeah, drafting. Yeah.
So I think, and it's drafting is the technique, and what you're caught in is a slipstream.
Mm-hmm. And this, they call it a slingshot, basically, and it only happens with other members of your team. So there's this idea that if you're within the front, you can somehow give your other teammates a boost. And if they get hurt, you can also drive nearby them and they revive faster. You can also throw an item to them. Like, if you have an item and you don't really see a need to use it, you can press a button and offer it up to any of your teammates who can press a button and take it for themselves. And every single team action you do builds up your super meter. And once you activate that, that gives you, like, 5 to 10 seconds of invulnerability and going super fast. Sort of like the Mario Kart Star.
So, I mean, do you have different... Okay, so I guess I have a couple of questions. One, are there different roles on the team? Like, do you want, like, you know, I assume it's not, like, tank, healer, DPS, but, like, do you have, like, oh, someone needs to be the heavy so they can run interference and someone should be, you know, like, is that at all a concept, or...?
I think that could be a thing. Like, there's cars that are... There's some cars that are slower but are bigger and more powerful, while other ones are smaller but get thrown around a lot more easily, and I could see you building a team composition with that in mind, but in practice I only think of the three of us trying to push for the first place together.
And the other question I have is, does it feel like, I mean, so these racers have always traditionally been like a solo affair. You know, there are modes in these games where it's team, but that's never really been the focus. And does it feel like, I know, can it feel frustrating? Like, let's say you're really good and you're on a team with two people who are not. And can you, is there that frustration of like, I'm killing it, what are these guys doing? Or like being dragged down by your team, or?
Yeah, the way that score works is at the end of the race, it calculates what place each person was in. So if you have people that were in first, then 10th and 11th, while the other team had second, third, and fourth, that's going to give them the edge overall. But the AI is surprisingly competent, and it's one of the situations where I played a bit of this with Ryan when they were at my place just hanging out, and it's one of the situations where I feel like if I was... We were going against each other, but I feel like if we were working together, it would be a situation of, well, this is a kart game that we can play together, and that's totally fine.
How does it compare to... I know they're different experiences, but did you ever experience the golden days of Mario Kart Double Dash's co-op mode?
I did not, sadly. Yeah, I've played some of it single player because I got a GameCube like a year or two ago and found that game for cheap, but that's a much different way to play it than what you've told me about Double Dash.
Well, I would love, because it seems I like these ideas a lot, and I would love to see it taken. You know, I always want games to be made more complicated because I'm the worst. yeah, that sounds interesting, and I would like to check that out.
Yeah, only thing I'll say is that their previous racing game like this was Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, and I do kind of miss the transforming vehicles and the fact that it had more than Sonic characters, but the Sonic characters that they have are kind of fun. Like, they love shouting very doofy quotes that make you kind of cackle at the game.
I mean, like, you couldn't have Sonic and Ryo on the same team. Ryo would never work with Sonic.
Yeah, if they did work on the same team, then Ryo would probably be the heavy with his forklift.
All right, we gotta go. Oh, no. that's my best Sonic and Ryo. There we go. You got it on record.
Also, it's worth mentioning that the whole story to this is that there's some Tanuki character who basically controls all of time and space and is like, I want you to drive these cars that I've made. And all the other characters are like, I don't know, this seems fishy. And Sonic's like, yeah, it's fishy, but let's just do it. This seems fun.
I love fish. It's not true. He loves chili dogs. I'm sorry. That was non-canon. Huh. All right. Well, it's. I mean, I don't know why they bothered with the story. It's not like any other kart racers do, but okay. Sure.
Yeah, it's pretty much a way to get you from event race to event race, but it's kind of funny. It was also especially funny because alongside that, we played like the first hour of Jak-X Combat Racing. Oh, that is a game that tries to tell a story, and it is not very successful, but it sure is entertaining to suddenly be watching the intro cutscene and Queen of the Stone Age starts blasting as a gruff Jack plows through a bar with his car.
I think I have that game and have never played it.
Yeah, so the basic story gist for that one is that you're invited to this will reading of this person who you hated. So not really sure why you're there in the first place. His daughter's all right, though, and she feeds all the people there this special wine. And basically a hologram message plays from the person they hated being like, haha, surprise, I've given you all slope-acting poison, and because I am an egomaniac even beyond the grave, I want you all to win this race for me, and my handlers will give you the antidote if you do.
Hmm. All right, sure. I love Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, basically.
To the poison you just drank, Dr. Jax. Well, I'm trying to think, like, I have been playing, I guess we should start with Dragon Quest Builders 2, right? That's the one to talk about. Dragon Quest Builders 2, I've been playing on Switch. I will say really quickly, there have been some parts where there's a little bit of framiness, but it's not really a game where that matters. And for the most part, it runs really well. Though there are also some long load times. So Dragon Quest Builders is a Dragon Quest game. And I'm not just saying that, like, oh, it's part of the Dragon Quest franchise. Like, it's if you're doing the meets, it's a Dragon Quest game mixed with, of course, you know, Minecraft. I would say Terraria more than Minecraft, though, to be honest. But that distinction is not meaningful to a lot of people. And then with a dash of Dwarf Fortress, it's a really fascinating game that I'm enjoying the hell out of.
Yeah, I heard people talk about how the villagers in this one are a bit more proactive than they were in the first game, and they kind of react to the things that you build.
Yeah, I mean, like, for the most part, like, at least at first, you know, it has a Nintendo worthy, you know, it has a Final Fantasy 13 worthy intro where it just, like, slowly opens up, and it's fun, but it's just like they're just rolling out new features for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. You don't unlock multiplayer for, I don't know, 20 hours? It takes forever.
Wow.
I that number could be wrong, but also I don't think it is. it's interesting because I never really clicked with Minecraft, right? Because I appreciate open worlds as long as there are goals, right? Like, I don't need someone to say, like, okay, do this, but I do need someone to say, like, okay, here are, like, landmarks you should reach, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to build this exact building, but have a building that can hold 12 people. And it's like, okay, within that framework, I can do some cool shit. In Terraria, I built, we had our own server, and I built a floating, massive building out of glass that held all of our stuff, and I cataloged it. So it's like, okay, here's the book, here's the area with all our books, here's the area with all our tools, here's all our crafting materials, all in, like, glass chests and glass bookshelves. And, you know, it was like I had enough guidance to let my creativity take off, a spark to catch the fuel, as it were. And I feel like that's where Dragon Quest Builders really succeeds, because they give you a lot of prompts, but they sort of leave it to you as to how to fill them. And then they do also increasingly, like, they scale up in a really satisfying way, right? Because, like, if you're playing Minecraft and you're like, I want to build a huge fortress, you know, you build it brick by brick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly you do that at first in Dragon Quest Builders. But at first you're also just trying to get the bare necessities to Jungle Book on you. you could, like, be like, well, no, I'm not progressing until I build this, like, 20-story whatever. But, like, even there are parts you just don't have access to, right? It will not allow you down the tech tree to get, say, a roof. And so there's a limit to what you can do, and so naturally your creations are scaled. But as you go along and unlock new tools, they also make lower levels more reasonable. Because, like, for example, the first major island you go to is, cause you have multiple locations that you're building up, is this, place called, Furrowfield, I think it's Furrowfield Island is what it's called. And it's like, it's a farming island and you're building up this old farm. So at first you're like, okay, let me, you know, set up these crops, and you, like, you slap down a scarecrow, and that indicates that an area is for farming. And then one of your farmers will turn the dirt into, like, dirt that's the usable soil. And then they'll hoe it, and then you plant, and they'll water it, and then you harvest it. And you do that for a while, and then you level up your base, and it's like, okay, now you can do that, and they'll harvest for themselves. You don't need to tell them to do that. It's like, oh, okay, great. And then, like, you level up more, and it's like, okay, they can figure out other stuff. And I've gotten to the point where it's like, okay, if you have a blueprint, because it's like, you can... Eventually, you get the ability to create blueprints, but also at first it lays out some specific ones. It's like, okay, this is an essential building. You need to build it like this. And you can improvise a little bit, but these things need to be here. And so you have this blueprint to work off of, and you're like, okay, I put some of these bricks here and these ones here, and eventually I build a building. But once you've leveled up enough, you create a blueprint, and you set a chest near the blueprint with materials, and the other villagers will say, oh, okay, we'll build the blueprint for you.
Huh.
And so they just keep getting better at stuff. Or like, one of the missions I had, I'd gotten to a new part of an island that was all like desiccate and like there was a dried up riverbed, and it was like, okay, let's make this lush and a beautiful paradise again. So create a river. And I was like, okay, great. I've got this pot that spews endless water. As long as I hold down the trigger, it will create more and more and more water. It's like, okay, I'll stand at the top and I will just pour water down this empty riverbank, this dried up riverbed. And they were like, oh, shoot, it got stopped because there's this part where it's all blocked up. And it's like, okay, we're going to clear this out. You can go do other stuff. And I was like, okay, I went to another island. I went on a little adventure and I came back and they're like, hey, while you were gone, we took care of the river.
Huh.
So I appreciate, because one of the problems I feel like a lot of these survival games have is that as you get to higher and higher levels of creativity, you just have more steps involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you get more and more options, but you still have to go down to the lowest level and work your way up again. And Dragon Quest Builders, in addition to having, you know, classic Dragon Quest personality and some really great polish, it also just allows you to automate the lower levels. So as you gain more options, the more basic stuff that has become rote, the game takes care of for you.
That's pretty awesome. And the way that they personify that through your villagers getting more and more capable themselves is very cool.
Yeah, it's really charming. It's not as charming as Dragon Quest 1. Or Dragon Quest Builders 1, in this sense. In Dragon Quest Builders 1, like, the premise was that no one knew what building was, and you're like, hey, I'm gonna tie a rope to this stick, and then I'll have a rope on a stick. And people were like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? And that was very funny. In this, it's a sequel, like, in narrative sense, and that original builder has come and gone, but the Children of Hargon, which is a cult run by monsters, are like, no, building is evil, you must destroy everything. And so they fully embrace how ridiculous that is, where people are like, well, I gotta do whatever the cult says, I couldn't possibly build, if I build something, I'm gonna get killed. And you're like, here's how you cook an apple. And they're like, oh, that's blasphemy. So it's very funny in that sense. And also, as you level them up, they get more, like, they even present it as like humans have this fundamental urge to create, which I think is fairly true, but the way they represent it is really cartoony, where it's like you find a person and he's like, I'm a loyal follower of the cult and there's nothing you can do that will make me change my mind. And you, like, walk 5 feet away from him and, like, put a seed on the ground, and he's like, I can't resist the urge to water this plant. So it's very charming, and I will note that as far as, like, creativity, they do place some hard limits. Like, there are blocks in the world that you cannot destroy, no matter what you do, because they don't want you to be able to, like, dig a hole to the bottom of the earth and then be stuck there, or destroy resources you'd need to continue. So there is a basic framework you cannot break, and I can see how that would be off-putting to some people, because at some points you encounter, like, oh, here's this cave, and it's a cave. I can maybe make it, like, I can hollow it out a bit, but the cave is here, and I can't make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you're willing to accept their limitations, I think it's for the best, and you get to have a lot of cool room to play with.
That's pretty neat. Does it have survival meters at all?
It has food and HP. Food doesn't matter. I don't know why they did that, to be honest. Like, I'm just walking, because your inventory space is, I guess it's technically limited, but the limit is in the hundreds of inventory slots, and, like, you can hold, like, one inventory slot could be 999 bricks. So it's like, it effectively is unlimited. I guess it's just like, at a certain point, you know, integers have to be capped. So you can carry basically as much as you want. So, like, at any given time, I'm walking around with a stack of, like, 200 cabbages, and it's like, oh, my meter's low, and I just stop for a minute and eat an entire cabbage head whole. And it's like, I guess it's kind of nice because you can, like, by cooking, you can create foods that give you special buffs. And so the survival mechanics, the one thing I will say that is a little annoying sometimes is that you will have, like, monster attacks, and sometimes they become a little obnoxious, but your villagers will also fight.
Okay, so they randomly attack various areas?
Yeah, and you'll get it, like, they attack, I mean, there are monsters out in the world, and then they'll say, like, you know, a group of monsters is coming to steal your crops, and then they'll spawn and try and attack your fields. It is nice that whatever damage they do, like, there are two things. One, if it's just a randomly generated attack, what they do is when they hit a plant, they just turn it into seeds, so you don't lose any resources, you just have to replant it, which is kind of annoying, but not, like, a huge problem. And then, during, like, big, like, scripted fights, your base can take damage, there's, like, a meter for your base, but after you finish a scripted fight, by the point those start happening, your villagers have leveled up a bunch, and so the fight finishes, and one of your villagers said, whew, we took a little bit of damage, hang on a second, and it fades to black, and then it fades back up, and like, okay, we fixed everything, and it's just, like, back the way it was.
Aw, that's nice.
Yeah, they want you to have a good time, so.
That's good to hear.
I'm trying to think if there's, the only other thing I feel like I'm qualified to talk about right now, as far as, like, recent and vaguely newsworthy, is I have finished the story mode of Final Fantasy XIV Shadowbringers.
Oh, nice. From what you've told me about that, it sounds like you had a pretty good time with it.
Yeah, I think it's the best Final Fantasy story they've done in, I don't know, a decade and a half, in quite a while. Let me see if I can... I stand by that statement. It's been a while since Final Fantasy has really been killer, in my opinion, and the story in this is just really, really good. There's some great character work, there's some really cool world building, there's some great twists. The thing I am concerned about, and I wrote a little bit about this, but I've had more insight since, is I feel like they have some work to do as far as the classes. And I'm getting to a point where I feel like I'm not like I'm going to be unhappy necessarily, but I realize that I don't think me and the Final Fantasy XIV like combat team are working towards similar ends.
Are they more PvP focused than you'd like them to be? Or?
No. In fact, PvP is really low on their priority list. It's pretty clear, and I appreciate that personally. I have some friends who don't. You know, friend of the site, Ty, would love a more PvP-focused version of the game, and I appreciate that. It's more like they want classes to... I am fine with classes being more complicated and there being more choices for you to make, and that seems to be, like, something they're really moving away from, and I find that frustrating. Like... a good example would be a warrior. In the previous expansion, the way warrior worked by the time you were level 70 was that you had a tank stance and a damage stance. You had, I think they were called, I remember, something in defiance, I don't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Tank stance, damage stance. Most of your moves worked in either. When you were in tank stance, you did less damage, but also took less damage, obviously. But you had also a meter that you built up as you did moves called the Beast Gauge. And you could spend that for a couple of special moves. There was a single target one, and then there was an AoE one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the when you were in tank stance, that the single target one like did damage, and then healed you, and then gave you damage resistance for a couple of seconds. And so it was like, okay, it's a great little burst of damage, but also you heal yourself, and you get a little more resistant, you get more tanky. And then the AoE was just like a damage and heal. And then when you're in damage stance, those moves were like on the same slot, but they changed so that they were just pure damage. And so it's like, okay, you can choose to switch to tank stance. You're in tank stance, and you can choose to switch to damage stance to spend this meter if you feel like you're in a good place and you want to do more damage. Or you can play it safe and use these abilities to do damage but also buff yourself. And they just took that away entirely in Shadowbringers. Now there's only tank stance, and on the one hand, that's kind of nice because it was kind of annoying to bounce between the stances, but, like, those abilities only do damage now. There's no utility to them.
Oh, jeez.
And it's not a case where, like, you're weaker because they've buffed your numbers, but it just means that your choices are less interesting, right? Like, are you up against one to two enemies, in which case use the single target, or are you up against three or more, in which case you use the multi-target? That's the only decision-making. There's no, like, do I want to trade damage for utility? It's just, like, is the meter full? Okay. How many are there? Okay. And it just, like, takes thought out of the process in a way I don't enjoy.
That's a shame. Yeah. When I recently returned... I've been playing the game leading up to Shadowbringers, and... I've been getting into it more now that Shadowbringers is out, even though I'm not close to actually using that content. But one thing I immediately noticed is several features on my hotbar were completely removed. Like, they had large red X's out of them, so I had to remove them from my bar and reshuffle things around.
Yeah, and I mean, you're playing Dragoon, which... I think mostly the Dragoon changes are for the better, because a large part of their goal was like, hey, we want to weed out, you know, like abilities that are not that useful, right? Like, as a Dragoon, you had two different combos. You had your 1-2, well, the way I had them set up, you had your 1-2-3 or your 4-5-6, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way they've changed it is they're like, what if you, like now, what if you went 1-2 and then you ended it with, or no, sorry, what if you did 1-2-3 or 1-4-5? What if we took out the first move in that rotation so that you always started with one because the difference wasn't interesting? And it's like, okay, that actually makes it more interesting because you have a bigger window to decide which series you want to go with, because the first move you do the same either way, so you have time to think, and it gets rid of sort of like some you know, chaff, a move that wasn't very interesting. But in the other case, you also have classes where, like, and like, I leveled Gunbreaker up to 80, and Gunbreaker is cool in its animations and its effects, and unbelievably simple as a class. You hit 1-2-3, or you hit 4-5 if there are multiple enemies, and then you hit your Gunblade when you have ammo, and that's all you do.
Huh.
And it's just like... there's no... I genuinely could... like, if it weren't for the fact that, you know, there are... So, in some fights, I should say, if I was doing a level 40 dungeon, I could do a boss fight as a Gunbreaker with my eyes closed. And it would be fine. And I think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, like, on the one hand, the image of a very capable gunslinger is kind of fun, but on the other hand... that sounds like it'd get boring real fast.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, I don't necessarily think you need to have... I don't know. I base a lot of my ideas on how this stuff should work on World of Warcraft, because that's what I grew up on, and I still hold a lot of World of Warcraft's combat ideas to be how this stuff should work. Because I think World of Warcraft's combat has always felt really good for all its other problems. And I think you need some element... of shifting to the circumstances of a fight, right? Whatever, you can do it different ways with different classes. Like, there are some classes where you, like, it's like, okay, in this fight, you want to use, like, armor reduction moves, and you use those in between your normal rotation. Or it's like, oh, you have, like, I played a lot of Fire Mage, which was a class that was focused on, like, they're called, you know, do you know the term proc?
Yeah.
Okay, based on procs, basically, where it's like, you'd cast spells, but sometimes they'd trigger an additional effect, and so that would change your entire sequence. And so Fire Mage became this class about, like, trying to string together critical hits, and it was very dynamic and very, explosive. And I think whenever a class is lacking that in an MMO, is lacking that dynamism, then you've fucked up.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So, they have a big balance patch happening in just over a week. There we go. I cracked the code on when we were recording this. Congratulations. Just over a week, they're going to put that out, and we'll be able to find out, you know, like they said, like, they're said they're doing a lot of changes. I have hopes, but usually that means that they're going, that it's not very common that they add new moves. And so I could see them making tweaks to a lot of the classes that would make them more playable. Scholar, everyone who's playing World of Warcraft. Why am I saying World of Warcraft? Everyone who's playing Final Fantasy XIV right now, basically, knows that Scholar is a disaster right now. It's just a terribly unfun class. But, like, classes like Gunbreaker or, like, the new Dancer, where I just feel like they don't have enough to do, it's pretty rare for patches to add new moves. So, I don't know about that.
Yeah. One bright thing I've noticed from Shadowbringers is that maybe it's just me, but it feels like more people than ever are playing this game. Like,
Yeah.
I feel like it's had this slow burn where, of course, the whole beginning of this game was a complete disaster, like everyone talked about, but when they rebuilt it as a Realm Reborn, it got fairly positive reception, and over time it's been this snowball situation leading up to Shadowbringers, and I was playing some of it earlier this week, and I had never seen it that crowded ever before. Like, even areas that are mostly where you find low-level quests and things like that, I saw people more or less lining up to complete their specific objective, and that was really fascinating to see.
Yeah. The game is definitely growing and growing. It's a very up time for them. And I think that's in large part because they've realized what their expansions should be. They've gotten better at telling stories. I know you're struggling through the 2.x series, the post-Realm Reborn, but before the first expansion story. And I think you'll be able to see that the story is getting better, but they also have such a long way to go because at first, they were just, like, they were doing, like, I would say Tolkien-ish, like, world building.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that as a flattering thing.
Yeah.
I mean that as, like kind of, like, slow and plodding and mundane and kind of boring. And perhaps overly obsessed with details.
Yeah. I've been an on and off player of this game for a few years now. And there's definitely... It definitely likes to, at least in A Realm Reborn, throw a ton of various proper nouns and names at you. And looking at this old fantasy map, and most of it is just sliding off to the point where when I came back a few months ago, I was kind of confused about where I was. And when they had a reveal about someone actually being an evil character, and it was like, wait, who's that again?
Yeah, and I had the exact same reaction when I played it. I was like, oh, I am supposed to know who this is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They definitely got better. They realized what the game should be. And by now, by Shadowbringers, they're just, like, they're very... An interesting way to track it is how they handle dungeons, right? Where, like, how do they story-wise contextualize the fact that there are other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the story dungeons of A Realm Reborn, you're doing these fights, and in the cutscenes, everyone else is, like, the other players are there, but they just talk as though they aren't. You're fighting Gaius Van Belsar, and there are seven people standing behind you. Some of them are, like, not wearing a shirt. One of them's wearing, like, armor made of guns. One of them is wearing, like, a blindfold and a bikini. And Gaius Van Belsar is like, "Come, hero!" And you're like... What about everybody else?
Yeah, when I was in that scene, there was, like, a clown bunny and a few other people.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, by, like, Heavensward and Stormblood, they start going, like, "All right, hero, we're gonna need your best. You and seven of your friends." And you're like, okay. And they're like, "You did a great job, as did your seven friends." It's like, all right. Sure. And by now, by Shadowbringers, they just don't show anybody else. They just, every time those cutscenes happen, it's you're just standing there by yourself. Because in the story of the game, you're the Warrior of Light. Nobody else is, right? And it's good that they're leaning in that direction and acting like it's a single-player game, even though mechanically it is not.
Yeah, I feel like in many ways, it's what Star Wars The Old Republic tried to do, but failed at hard, because it was mostly... Star Wars The Old Republic was mostly about transferring the BioWare-style choices into a format that would not allow that sort of customization at all. So it was mostly a situation of, well, this is a... I guess I'm getting some of the things I like from a BioWare game, but it's none of it's really playing out the way that I'd want it to. Meanwhile, this one is like, okay, yeah, I can sit down for some Final Fantasy. I can listen to what they have going on.
So, here we go. You set yourself up for this by bringing up The Old Republic. If this were more like that, and you could romance the other NPCs, who would you pick? I think I know the answer, but I hope I'm wrong, because the answer depresses me.
Probably Ishtola.
Oh, damn. Okay, good pick. Okay.
Did you think right. I was going to go with Alpha? No.
Yeah, I was worried. You really like cops, Jin. You really have a cop thing.
Look, he has this really cute outfit where he's practically wearing these boy short leggings that are fantastic, but
that the thing? Nines has little shorts. Is your thing just that you have a fetish for shorts? Is that the secret?
No, it's just this very specific sort of, I don't know, this very specific type of boy that's very earnest and weird, and it's kind of like, oh, you're adorable. But Ishtola has more character to her than Alphano does, so I can definitely get behind her more, because she's constantly biting back and just... I don't know. She's very cool. They give her lots of cool moments.
There's a I quick non-context spoiler warning for Stormblood. There's an arc with a character in Stormblood who you haven't met. It's a new character who's like going on and on about how he needs to basically he's like an asshole, but he's like basically he's like a solo king and he needs to find his queen, and he just keeps asking people and he's like, is it you? No, it couldn't be you. And he finally he meets Ishtola randomly and he's like, it's you! You! Won't you be my queen? And she's like, I'm not interested, honey. Please grow up. And it's so good. She just dunks on him.
Amazing. Yeah. If I was going for a joke answer, I'd probably go Urianger, because he's...
Oh, so first off, it's Urianger.
What?
That's how you pronounce it. It's Urianger.
Okay.
I forgive you, because his name doesn't... don't see it spoken that much, because in the base story, he doesn't get to do very much. He'll get to do more later. Okay, explain your joke answer so that I can tell you more about Urianger and what he's like.
he's the character that speaks like the Final Fantasy XII characters, where he's, except even more, he old speaks sort of thing. He seems like a person who's very interested in playing a role around a bunch of people who are kind of over that shit.
He, especially in Japanese, he comes across as really just like capital W, capital, you know, R, woman respecter. It's really, he's insufferable. I like him because he's the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, the way that people described him to me on Twitter was that, He's very much someone who makes very long posts and then DMs people to see their feet.
Okay, that checks out. I do like him as a character, but he's a fucking mess. And he doesn't know that he's a mess, so it's worse. Ugh, yeah. Buddy.
I hear that Alphano's sister is less of a cop than he is, so...
Yeah, Alphanode's sister Alize is cool. You should have more content with her coming up, I think.
Awesome.
So, you could have met her by now if you did some optional dungeons. It's kind of a pain in the ass, though. She's a lot more in Heavensward, though.
Okay, yeah. I've been stacking up some optional dungeons here and there, but I haven't really gotten a chance to do them yet, so that's good to know.
Cool. All right, so as far as upcoming coverage, on Friday, Fire Emblem Three Houses is coming out, so I'll be picking up that. I will be guesting on a podcast called Nintendo Main, run by a former coworker of mine, where they ask me about that, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to talk about it over here on Scanline in another capacity. They have a very different tone than we do, so I don't know. We'll see what kind of format that coverage takes. I could see it being a review cast at some point, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
What else is on the docket here?
So, the next Ultimate Despair reprise will likely be next week, just because scheduling is kind of difficult for that show sometimes, just because it's managing four different people's schedules at once, and that's a lot more difficult than how we managed to do this one, where it's just like, hey, you want to record? Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what else do we have? I know that next week on Monday we're gonna have a pretty cool episode about of Oopsaw Anime.
Yeah, we've been doing some pretty cool episodes lately. I'm excited for the next one as well. But yeah, we've had a run of some good guests and some good shows.
Yeah, and we have more in the pipeline for that too, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Any games you're looking forward to covering soon?
I do have a copy of The Sinking City that my brother sent me, which I'm really curious about. And, at some point, I'd like to play Wolfenstein Youngblood with you, because I kind of like the way that those specific shooters go, because it's one of those situations where a lot of that team came from the Starbreeze people who made The Darkness and stuff like that. So they know how to make a pretty good shooter. And I'm excited to see what a co-op version of that looks like.
Yeah, I'm really into the tone as far as I've seen about it and been told about it. And so, yeah, we're looking into maybe streaming that. We'll see how it goes. I think we're ready to wrap it here. This is a free podcast, so we can do an actual plug zone here. So, Jen, why don't you go first?
Okay. You can find me at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my podcasts are on most of my podcasts are on Scanline Media, either through the website or the Patreon itself, which is patreon.com/scanlinemedia. And I also have a visual novel podcast with Six and a friend from Abnormal Mapping named M called Novel Not New, a True End Podcast. And we're pretty close to getting through 428. Should be a scramble, I think. So hopefully we'll have an episode of that up soon.
That's a long game.
Yeah, very long.
But yeah, I think that'll be coming out, you know, no timers on it, but I think it'll be soon. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. You can find their pinned tweet that tells you all the shows that I do. But yeah, scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia if you want to check out the stuff. Oops All Anime, Oops More Anime, Johto Quorum, Scanline Talks, which is what this is going up on, Neutral Game, all the hits, all the jams. And yeah, we're gonna be trying to do more Scanline Talk stuff. I mean, I guess this is the second one that's going to be going up this same week. So I guess that's probably obvious by this point. But we started this to be a video games coverage website, and we mostly talk about anime these days. So it'd be fun to talk about games more. We still like video games a lot. It's just that we stopped writing about them as much, but that doesn't mean we can't podcast about them now and then.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, word to your moms. I came to drop bombs. Peace out. Can I say that after the... I can't threaten to drop bombs and then say peace out. That's not... Well, actually, that's very American, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess it is.
Well, anyway. Good night or good day or good morning. Bye. Thanks for stopping by.
Have a nice one. So long. Farewell.